Blog Talk Radio.
The link where you smell blood and victory, and we causing a stink. So don't come here trying to get bad, pumping noise,
cause here come the boys.
It's Alex and McNabb and C-Nab, no way you can stop him. He gon' get his even if he run or stay in the pocket. They too fat to catch him, too small to sack him.
And they arms too short, no way you can block.
And you know Brian Dawkins is wrong,
and he's sick with the hits cause he got players coughing the ball.
And yo, your line needs to read the defense book.
They stand up, we knock him down like a right jab in the left hook.
Oh, it's the replay.
Now let's look, these cameras ain't lying right up the gut.
Brian Westbrook.
Now what is y'all thinking? You better run faster than that, or you look at the back of Tom Pinkston.
My Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Your Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up.
No matter where you take us, still kicking field goals on our own 10-yard line with Dave Aiken.
Yo, the enemy is at war,
but their luck's over. Giving hell to your soldiers with Terrell Buckholz.
If you down with the visitors,
yo, you better run because the 200 levels are old safe. I know why your boy's missing.
He got stopped for doing the block, but he got popped.
Jimmy Johnson know we hitting.
Had your QB stretched on the turf cause he knows for blitzing.
And your coach, I know he crying. His arm sent shut down by Ben Corey Simon.
And he be making gameplay fast. Take a look down in the end zone, you can see score, you gon' have to applaud.
We up in Philly, dog, you know what happens to Santa Claus.
Yo, our team got heart, y'all can't stand up.
But yo, it's all Philadelphia Eagles.
I said your hands
our
up.
Our team got heart, y'all can't stand up.
But yo, it's all Philadelphia Eagles. Put your hands up.
My Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Your Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our 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 Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Your Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. My Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Your Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Our Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up.
Welcome to another Sports Tonight, gentlemen. As Barbie's in the den right now, irritate me right now, but it's okay. Barbie's cooked a good dinner tonight, gentlemen. So welcome to another Sports Tonight, brought to you by Brad for White Water Eaters of Amber, Pennsylvania, and also the Abbey Course of Helios University. Give them a call, 352-588-2016, Tampa Bay Golf Country Club, 352-588-5454. I'd like to welcome our Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Hendler, and our Philadelphia legend, Mr. Don Henderson. Gentlemen, you used to see Barbie comes in around 7:01. The dogs are barking. And she says, I thought your show starts at 7:30. So what a way to start off the week here, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy, before we get too far into
she knows there's a show.
Yeah. Tommy, before we get too far into the show, I
yes,
want to dedicate this show to three guys that really took a hard knock today. Two federal officers over in Highland Counties were shot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah.
Trying to make an arrest, and a Delaware trooper was shot. So we want to dedicate this show to the three officers that went down today.
Frank, I have a question about that because I got the bulletin from CBS in Philly about the Delaware trooper. They were not killed, though, fortunately, were they?
No, thank God. Well, the
mm-hmm.
one federal officer was shot, grazed his head. The other one took a bullet in the shoulder, and the Delaware trooper took a bullet in the arm.
Oh,
thank God that they're alive. That's
I'll tell you. And every day is something. How about the poor fellow killing his own son, for crying out loud?
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to note something because I know we're going to be talking about. I'm sure we'll talk about the how the Monday night game ended. But I mentioned this to I think you, Tommy, and Frank, and also I called Don about it. You know, we've been trying to get Art McNally on. He's one of the supervisors, longtime official, and, of course, Don and I know him. He lives in Yardley. Well, I met John Schleiler, who's an associate supervisor at the last Falcons game, and I gave him my card. He was going to give it to Art, but John is willing to come on. He was on the team of Bob McAwee. Remember the referee,
yeah.
Bob McAwee was
sure.
in the field. And John
sure.
said that he'll be happy to come on, but that none of them are allowed to be on during the season.
Right.
Oh,
so
okay.
after the season. But then I was thinking, Don, today maybe we could get McAwee on one night, you know, because he was over in Haddonfield and he's no longer involved, I don't think, with the NFL.
Right. As I said to you the other day, that must be a rule change because they never had that embargo on the officials. They didn't necessarily allow you to talk to them on the field or after the game, but they didn't have that embargo on the supervisors once they got into Tuesday or Wednesday of the week because we had them on many, many times. So what he told you must be a new rule from NFL headquarters.
Yeah, well, what you're looking at is if you saw the other night, ESPN had contracted with, I thought, one of the best referees I've ever seen over the years, Jerry Austin. And of course, Mike Pereira is contracted with Fox. He was on Sirius NFL Radio. He was all over the place. And then they did have the current vice president of officiating. I think his name is Dean Ladino. Frank, you probably know more than I do. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
And they've had
yes.
him on. But, you know, it's a very ticklish situation, and I believe that what the protocol is now after the games, if there's controversy, there's a pool reporter is allowed to go and meet with the referee of that game after the game. And that's it. They're not allowed to talk to, any other media members. So,
right.
you know, that's the way it is, but at least we have something to look forward to in the months ahead.
Well, I really believe, Roger, they're going to change, and they talked about this on the post-game show on Monday. I don't know how many people stayed up late enough because I wanted to see what Bill Belichick had to say in his post-game comments.
Well, he didn't say much, did he, Captain Abbott?
I'll tell you, he was terrific. He was absolutely terrific. He came into the interview room, and he must have stood before the microphones for 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
Nobody said anything. Nobody asked a question. Nobody said anything about anything. And when the first question was asked, it wasn't even about the play. It was about competition in the game. I mean, didn't have anything to do with the play.
He said that question's been asked four times or something like that.
That's exactly what he said to him. He said to him, that question has been asked four times. And what he had done was, and I think correctly, and Brady did the same thing in his portion later on when he came back after the game. and you could see how he how animated he was as he walked off the field. I don't know whether you fellas stayed up late enough to see.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah,
as he
right
walked off
the
field, he was screaming at the official. There was no question about it. He got before the microphone and he said, "You know, these things happen. I threw the ball too low. You know, everybody has to make a judgment." I mean, he really handled it as beautifully as you can. And in all honesty, Bill Belichick did. I mean,
right.
The only reference he made was it's the second time it's happened to us. It happened to us in Baltimore. And that was all he said. He said everything comes down from the NFL office, and if you have any questions, ask them.
Right.
What Don and everybody remember New England, that snow game up in New England? Remember that the tractor player did. He cleared out one thing for the kicker, and so finally comes back to get New England on Monday night. It's so funny what the tractor did. He's just on a release program. He cleared out one way for the kicker, and the kicker kicked the game-winning field goal.
Well, that's right. You control your own stadium. I'll tell you, there was a call on Sunday. I forget what game because I saw so many games, but they said that it was an incomplete pass. And the guy was in bounds when he got it, and they said that he didn't have total of possession. Now, I will tell you from what I saw on television, he had total possession as he slid across the white perimeter of the field, which is out of bounds. Okay?
Right.
And
that was
that
was a Monday night's game, and they cast for a replay. They said he had reached out, and in fact, he had. And reviewed the play, and they adjusted it and gave him a first down.
Oh, they did. Okay. Well, then there was another one where they said it was incomplete in another game, and that was it. And I said, wait a minute. That's not an incomplete pass. He had control of that out of bounds, and then when he gets past the white perimeter of the field, then he juggles it, but he still has it on his body.
Right.
Like, come on. I mean, what's right?
Well, the other thing on Monday night that they said, which I thought was really, really well thought out, and that was that not only should plays be, reviewed so that the coaches have the opportunity, but also officials' plays should be reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Like this play that we're talking about to end the game, whether their interpretation, and as you said, Roger, the expert official of past in the booth, agreed with it 100%. He said the call was absolutely correct. The ball was intercepted. It was thrown. I think we're going to see a change in the rule. That was absurd. I mean, pushing the guy from 1 yard in the end zone. You're pushing him all the way through the end zone and out. At least it had to be holding. I mean, if you say, okay, interception. The minimum it should have been was holding. They should have gotten one more play at the one-yard line. I mean, that was absolutely ridiculous.
Well, Don, I'll tell you what shocked me. Gronkowski says it was the right call.
What?
That's what he said NFL radio. He said the referees had made the right call by throwing that flag.
I when I saw that game, I don't like Captain Happy well known that, but I think New England got a bad call because he was holding from the line of scrimmage and the guy was intercepted. But how can you have any chance of the offensive receiver guys their defensive guy face guarded all the time the balls to be intercepted because he's face guarding his player all the time as a bad call. And I how much I hate New England and Captain Happy, but they got robbed big time. Might come back and hurt him, I think.
Well, as Young said on the post game show, he said, you know, you could say what you want to about the ball is intercepted.
Right.
But with the receiver that he was throwing to, if he could stop, the chances of him catching that football are very, very good. You know, if you're not pushing him through the end zone, the chances, is a little defensive back going to step in front of him and catch that ball?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Well, I'll tell you, Don, I'd like Frank's input on this as a football coach.
Yes,
feeling was they called the wrong play. They should have gone to Gronkowski on an out pattern where he could use his height and throw it up. And like you're saying, when you have a small defensive back, he would not have been in a stable position to be pushed back because he would have been going to the right and he could have caught the ball. That's the play I would have called.
Yeah, that's exactly what it should have been called, Roger.
You're talking about a fade to the sidelines, you're talking about.
Yeah, to go down and out and then throw the ball because of Gronkowski's size. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could have beat anybody. Frank, do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do.
I'll tell you, I give the Patriots all the credit in the world after a horrendous, it was a great game. And mm-hmm. after that call at the end of the game, and every one of them, from Belichick to Brady, every one of them came out and said, you know, it's part of the game. We did a lot of things wrong. We'll have to correct it before we play the next game. None of them, and of course, as Belichick didn't say, but he just insinuated, he said, you know, I learned my lesson about making any comments about the league office.
Right. That's right.
Well, you know, we got to give a lot of credit to the Ron Rivera, the former Eagles assistant coach, and Cam Newton, who I've never been a fan of. And I'll tell you what, they've got that. Ron's got that team moving.
Yep.
Oh yeah, they played very well. No question about that. They had a great night. And it was just a shame that it had to end the way it did, because it was really a terrific, terrific game. And I would like to have seen the Patriots get that last shot on the one-yard line to see if
right.
they could stop them, because, you know, for Brady to take them all the way down in 58 seconds, I mean, that would have been another miracle finish for him. And I don't think many people in that league can do that.
Well, no, and he was lucky to get it on that fourth down where he got the first down on the fourth
right.
down. That could have been it around midfield.
Right. You're exactly right.
Roger, how about your big game tomorrow night? You're going to see the Falcons. Oh, boy.
Big game, Tommy? Big game? Are you serious?
Roger, I'll tell you, you said this earlier on, that actually 2 weeks ago, not just last week. You said this 2 weeks ago that this team has completely, between the injuries and what's happened, and as they said on TV, they should be out playing golf right now because, boy, oh, boy, you talk about a team in disarray and really doesn't want to play. That's the
Well, you're right,
Falcons.
Don, and I want to tell you, in the AJC today, there's three different stories. One by columnist Jeff Schultz, who I know you guys have seen over the years. He's been a long-time columnist. And
right.
He basically has come out and said that the players no longer listen to Mike Smith. The message has gotten stale, and it's not a matter of injuries. He said that the players that aren't hurt should be playing up to their potential and doing the job, and they're not. And that's the first, even though he said Arthur Blank, and you had that interview, Tommy, which I've used, and
right.
About what Arthur support. But on Monday, for the very first time, there was a news reporter with the camera crew, in addition to the regular Fox 5 reporter.
Wow.
Camera. And her name's Angelique Proctor. And she was there, and she asked Mike Smith about the feelings of the Falcons because the people, the fans, are dumping the tickets. And, you know, when you have that situation, and, of course, what Arthur Blank said, hey, we had five successful years, and you look at this team over history, and it's up and down and losing more mm-hmm. than winning. So, but I think now when you get a regular news reporter at the press conference, and then you saw what Jeff said today in his column, I mean, he really laid it out.
Well, Roger, the other thing that really was a surprise to me after the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had won the game to end that 8-game losing streak, and then we're playing, almost every columnist that I read said there wasn't even a third of Raymond James filled for that game, you know, this last Sunday. I mean, now he's guaranteed the games are going to be on TV, but at the same time, I mean, a third?
Yep.
You know,
well,
you,
Tommy, you were there, you and Frank.
Yep.
I think about that. It's a tough thing up there. But, gentlemen, we got a special guest on the line. Director of Communication for the Outback Bar, our good friend, my good friend Mike Schulze. Mike, happy Thanksgiving to you, sir, and hope things are going busy down your office this last couple of weeks.
Hey guys, glad to be on. Yeah, it's going great. Going great. And you know, happy Thanksgiving to everybody there and everybody
you too,
listening.
Mike.
We're getting down the final stretch here for the college football, which is exciting, but it's also sort of sad that it's already come to an end, at least the regular season. But it's certainly shaping up to be an interesting season, and it's going to be it could be very, very interesting next couple of weeks.
Well, as you say time and time again when you're on the show, and that is that it goes by so quickly. I mean, it's here. It's the middle of the season, and then before you know it, it's the end of the season, and so many things are liable to happen over this last two-week period. I think it makes it even more interesting than we would think. In Florida State, possibly going to have to change quarterbacks. The Florida, as much problem as Florida is having with their team, but on top of that, all the other teams that are in the hunt now to be in everything.
Yeah, well, you know, again, I mean, there's a lot of really important and big games, big matchups that are coming up in the next couple of weeks for all the top teams and not only not only the top teams in the national rankings, but also the top teams in the SEC, the Big Ten, in our case. I mean, you know, there's it could go a lot of different ways. Nobody's won. Any conference yet? Nobody's won, national championship yet. They all got to play some really tough games.
Big games.
Mike,
I'm going
to ask, is there any chance that South Carolina could be in the bowl, do you think?
I'm sorry?
Is there any chance that South Carolina Gamecocks could be in the Outback Bowl this year?
Oh, we don't eliminate anybody, that got a good record right now. I mean, it's hard to say, what's going to happen. You know, right now, seriously, the South Carolina is looking to win the SEC right now.
Hmm.
And they could do it. If Missouri, Missouri's got to play a couple games left, conference games left, including I believe they play Texas A&M their last game.
Right.
And if they drop either one of those games, South Carolina, who's already finished their conference schedule, would win the SEC East and square off against Alabama.
Wow.
So they're right now looking to take care of business and do and potentially get into that SEC championship game if Missouri were to trip up, and Missouri's got their hands full in the next couple of weeks. So that's just one example, but I mean, you just really can't, project exactly what's going to happen here down the stretch. I mean, there's some big games, left. I mean, Auburn and Alabama. I dare any of you guys to tell me that there's no way in the world Auburn can't beat Alabama. May not be able. I don't know if they can stop them, as well as some of the teams that they've played, but they sure as heck might be able to outscore them. And maybe that's one way to beat those guys. So there's some big games out there. Nobody can count their chickens yet. they need to, take care of business, go out each week and win games.
Mike, how can a person be involved at a ball game by ticket wise, or how about if they want to do those sponsor package by what you guys have off? How can they get involved in this great game?
Well, Tommy, we've got, tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster, as they have been the last couple of months. So we still have tickets on sale at Ticketmaster. We do have sort of what you would term as premium seat packages through the Outback Bowl office. So you can purchase seats in the very best sections of the stadium through our membership program. There's information on our website at outbackbowl.com, and those can be purchased through us directly, or you can purchase tickets through Ticketmaster. And certainly, here's our advice: avoid the Black Friday. avoid having to go shopping on Thanksgiving when you'd rather sit in front of the TV and digest your food. And buy some Outback Bowl tickets for your favorite college football fan, and get your Christmas shopping done that way. That's
the best way to do it. That's the
best
way to do it.
you must have all eyes on the Big Ten right now to see what's going to develop there, because you indicated they have some big games, but there's also, you know, throw the ball up in the air and see what happens here.
Well, you know, again, I mean, you know, just let's take the Big Ten. I mean, we, you know, of course, we have the Big Ten, the SEC in our poll,
right?
And you know, and again, there's some big games, especially on the Legends Division side. You know, Michigan State right now they're in command in the Legends Division, but you know they got two games left, and you know we'll see what happens. But you know, even if they were to win the Legends Division. You've got Nebraska and Michigan and Minnesota and Iowa all battling it out, and they all pretty much play each other in some way, shape, or manner the next couple weeks, and it could go a lot of different ways there. And then of course you have the Big Ten championship game, which you know, Ohio State is looking really good. I think they're going to win the rest of their games. They probably should, certainly, based on what we've seen. But I'll tell you what, if they get to that Big Ten championship game and say it's Michigan State that they face, that's going to be a tough game. I mean, everybody mm-hmm. is really touting Michigan State's defense.
Right.
And, you know, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, that's going to be a huge game for them.
Okay. You know, I agree about that because, you know, I think with that the Big Ten and the SEC, you guys don't know yet who's going to be in until the championship game's up there and that. But tell everybody the events during the bowl week. It's be a big part of the Outback, but they could be go to the beach day and everything else that would you guys have to offer.
Yeah, we've got a great schedule, Tommy, as you know of the events and you know they're for the local people as well as the out of town folks and. You know, we got some really fun things. You know, we're going to be taking the teams out to Busch Gardens on Friday the 27th this year.
Hmm.
The teams are going to be out there enjoying the park, and you know, fans want to come out and experience the park and be able to, you know, rub elbows with some of the players, maybe get some autographs and pictures taken. That'd be a good time to do it. On Saturday night, the 28th, where the teams will be down at Splitsville, down at Channelside in the evening, and they're going to have a good time down there. Fans can come out starting about 7:15 to see the teams there. Sunday night, the 29th, the teams are going to be at the Tampa Bay Lightning game. I believe they're playing the Rangers that night.
Yes.
And that's going to be a lot of fun, and the teams will be out there together. Then on Monday, they'll be at Clearwater Beach for our annual Beach Day event, which is one of our biggest events around the bowl. We're going to have the college bands performing on the beach, and we're going to have live music on stage and skydivers and the cheerleaders, compete in the tug-of-war contest, all kinds of fun stuff going on out there. And that's on Monday the 30th. And then on the 31st, we've got the New Year's Eve parade down in Ybor City. So lots of really fun things that taking place, you know, the entire week leading up to the game. Of course, it all culminates in the Outback Bowl game, but a lot of fun things, you know, for people to do, out of town folks to experience the great amenities we have here in the Tampa Bay area, and fun opportunities for local fans to get out and sort of mix with the school, you know, fans from out of town and meet the players and just sort of experience the whole environment around the bowl game. So we're looking forward to a really fun week. It's coming up. We're, you know, be here before we know it. And then, of course, hopefully another great game on New Year's Day. I think we talked earlier about some of the teams. You know, if you look at some of the teams, you know, that are in the top half of the standings, if you will, the Big Ten, the SEC this year, you know, there's some good teams in there that we can – potentially put together in our game to create a really nice matchup, and a few teams that we've never even had before. I mean, you know, look at, you know, if Missouri ends up, you know, in a position where, you know, we were to bring them in, or a Texas A&M, or Nebraska from the Big Ten, you know, we've never had those guys in our game, and then you've got, you know, the LSUs and teams like that we haven't had in a very, very long time. Wisconsin we haven't had in probably 6 or 7 years, you know. You know, some of these teams. So, you know, there's some good teams that it looks like we're going to be able to have a shot at, and I think we'll be able to put together another nice matchup.
And the main thing, these teams, Mike, these teams like Missouri, never been, or Nebraska, and Texas A&M, they travel well. They'll bring a lot of fans to the stadium and sell out the place, and a lot of money goes to the Tampa Bay economy. It's another great thing.
Yeah, and that's right, Tom. I mean, you know, why do we even have a bowl game here? Well, it's, you know, the main selfish reason that the people, you know, us who live here have a bowl game is, you know, is to create a huge economic impact for the community,
mm-hmm.
To showcase the community nationally and internationally, to, you know, valued at tens of millions of dollars of exposure for the community and the tourist destination here. And, of course, to do something that's really fun for the people like us who live here. And so those are the three legs of our stool of what, you know, why we're even here, what we're trying to do each year. And you know, thankfully, we've been here for 28 years now and been able to really do some special things for the community and showcase the area we live in. So it's a lot of fun in that regard, and we're just happy to be able to keep doing it year after year.
28 years? Oh, my God.
You almost need to have a sponsorship from the Pep and Heart Hospital, the way your games have ended the last 3 years.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, the last four games, two of them went to overtime, the other two were decided in the final minute. So, I guess maybe our new slogan should be stay to the last, you know, to the last buzzer or whatever, because you do not want to leave our games early, that's for sure.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, all those games have been great out there, Mike. And I still remember the day I died, the first time I seen Ohio State there, and the first time I see the guy dot the I with the tuba, and it's one of the guys in the media, God bless him, not with us, he said, why are they doing that? I said, well, it's tradition. Ohio State, the tuba dots the I, and he plays Script Ohio up there. That was one of the highlights, to see Script Ohio live up there. And also meeting the famous players that played the game.
By the way, I don't think we ever let that guy back, because if he didn't know what the heck that meant, then he didn't deserve to be there.
Well, I've explained to him. I says, the poor man is deceased. I says, Carl, please get out of the way. I'm going to watch him dot the I. I'll explain to you that later.
He must have never seen a football game before that one.
I don't think so on that. But Mike, that's the main thing. College football, big time, New Year's Day. I mean, I've been with you guys since like 28 years. And every year I look forward to that college football game, New Year's Day. And, you know, we're very blessed to have it here. You, Jerry, and Jim McVay do a great job. I'm very blessed to be with you guys for 28 years. I just can't believe it. These years have gone by,
Tommy,
Mike.
Tommy, just tell them the truth. Just tell them the truth, because
what?
When you finish eating there, that takes care of the first third of the year.
And Leo.
No. Well, you know what? You know, Tommy,
Leo puts it in his pocket
and
takes it home.
I appreciate the kind words, Tommy, but I'll tell you, you know, you're right. I mean, it's amazing. You know, when this thing, you know, and I was around here too, when this game first started, you know, there were only 12 other bowl games in the country. It was a fledgling bowl. It really did struggle the first year or two. But here we are 28 years later. We've been a New Year's Day bowl game for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
This will be our 26th year as a New Year's Day bowl game. We have had Outback Steakhouse has been our title sponsor. This is their 19th year as our title sponsor, the longest title sponsor of any bowl game in the country. And ESPN, you know, we've been with them now for over 20 years. We've been with the Big Ten, the SEC, for roughly about 20 years each. And each of those entities have all extended their contracts with us for six more years after this year's game.
Nice.
So,
wow.
You know, that says a lot about the community, the stadium, the bowl game organization, and the destination here, that they want to continue that relationship. And Outback Steakhouse, you know, again, you know, continuing their sponsorship. You know, by the time this next contract period is over, they will sponsor this game for 25 years. You know, you just don't see that. And
no.
And that just says a lot about like you said, the community and the bowl and everything, and the fact that, you know, those relationships have gone that long and that deep. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is the best bowl trip in the country, mm-hmm. bar none. The teams absolutely love coming here. Fans love coming here with all the great things that this area has to offer. And we're very proud to represent the region here, the communities, you know, to the rest of the country and the rest of the world in providing something that's really good for the area, both economically and from an exposure standpoint, and entertaining, you know, the people here locally and from out of town, and giving them, you know, an experience that they'll always remember. So that's what keeps us going each year, and, you know, we're just proud to be a part of it.
I just can't wait for it, Mike. I remember the sign at the old Tampa Stadium, and I remember this to the day I die. Tampa Bay, where the life gets better every day. And I remember that sign where my old Buccaneer seats used to be, where that sign that says, hey, I'm starting to believe in us now. Then that first year you had the Hall of Fame game, I was there as a fan, and I caught the first, gentlemen, I caught the first football, an extra point, but I had to give the football back. All my years of watching football, you catch something, you have to give the football back in that. So.
Well, I think one of the things you said is absolutely true. Everybody that talks about that has participated as a coach, as a player, they say exactly the same thing that you just said, that what a pleasure it is to come to Tampa, the Tampa area, and all the things that go into the Outback Bowl, because, as you indicated, it's one of the finest places in the country to go, and they really appreciate it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, with everything that we, you know, and you know, we live here, so we tend to sometimes take things for granted, as people do. And not appreciate it as much as we should probably sometimes. But, you know, from people that are coming in from other parts of the country, whether it be Georgia, Tennessee, you know, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, you know, and the sea, you know, this is a place that people, as we like to say, you know, people save up their money all year to be able to come down here for a week of vacation. We get to live here, you know, all year round. But this is really a special place with all the great things that are here to do and see. And then it's not the newest anymore, but it's certainly still one of the finest football stadiums in the country. The fans love the stadium. The teams love the stadium. You know, again, just the organization, the people in the community here, the hospitality that they provide to the fans and the teams. They're treated so well here. They just really, really appreciate it. And every single team that we've ever had here has said it's the very best. It's the very favorite bowl trip for their school to be a part of. And so we've been very fortunate to have a great relationship with these conferences and the teams. But you know, at the end of the day, it comes also from the foundation of it is from the support that the community provides, from people buying tickets to the title sponsors and our other local sponsors, the TV network ESPN is, you know, we were one of the first bowl games on ESPN back when, you know, there weren't a lot of major sporting events on ESPN. And we took a chance on them, what a great decision that was to be a part of those guys, and they've in turn really done a great job of supporting the bowl game over the years, I think 21 years now that we've been with them, and that again it all goes in the pot, and it makes up the recipe for something that's really good for the community. Really good for college football.
Well, you
Mike,
know, Mike, the question I have is not living in Tampa, and it's on a personal nature. How did you get involved, with the bowl? Were you with it from the beginning 28 years ago?
Well, in some ways I was. I actually was working at the University of South Florida in their athletic program, working in a variety of different areas from fundraising initially for athletics to operations. And at the time, I actually, when the bowl started, I helped out working with the media organizers during the week of the bowl game. And so I volunteered, you know, at the media hotel and worked the in the press box for the initial bowl games that were started here. And then I believe in the third year of the bowl, or third or fourth year of the bowl, they hired me to actually come on board and work full-time on the staff when they put together a full-time staff. When the bowl very first started, they had a staff per se, but it was sort of run under the umbrella of the Tampa Sports Authority, which ran the stadium. Mm-hmm. And they quickly realized after about 2 years that this really wasn't something that they needed to or had the ability to manage and run properly, and that they needed to actually have a full-time dedicated solely to the bowl game staff put in place and to run it like a business, so to speak. And so they brought in Jim McVay, who had worked for the Tampa Bay Bandits USFL team, and then later worked for the Buccaneers as the president there. And they hired him, and then he assembled a staff, and then I joined that staff, I think, about a year later.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You were way ahead of the curve because the Chick-fil-A Bowl has had their offices for years, I mean, as long as I've been here, going on 6 years, at the Chamber of Commerce. And this year they moved out. It's still in the city, but away from downtown, and now they have their own offices. And this is the first time that that's happened.
Yeah, different bowl games are operated quite differently depending on where they're at and how they were originally formed. You know, some are operated as part, like the, I know in Nashville, the Music City Bowl is run by the Sports Council there. I believe the Capital One Bowl in Orlando is somewhat the same type of thing in that it's, I know that they, because they don't have an NFL tenant or anything in the stadium, they sort of run the stadium as well as the bowl game there. So everybody's a little bit different and unique. That's sort of one of the neat aspects of the bowls, I think, over you know, historically, is that they've all sort of come to be in different ways and you know, by different methods, and they're run, you know, slightly differently. So it's you know, some of the newer bowls are being added, you know, basically born from the conferences, and the conferences going to TV networks and starting their own bowls. Some of the brand new ones you're going to be seeing coming online in the next couple of years. Some of the smaller conferences are going out and basically starting their own bowl games in order to have places for their teams to go play. But the more traditional games like ours that are cut from the traditional bowl template, you know, have all sort of started in slightly different ways over the years and are run a little bit differently. But we obviously it was a very good decision to do what they did here in Tampa at the time they did it. And it really made a huge, huge difference with regard to the long-term success of the bowl. I think if they had not done that, I don't know, frankly, if the bowl would have survived trying to be just an event, so to speak, that the Sports Authority had, was working on as one of the many things
as
they
Roger
did.
Just said, you guys were pretty much ahead of the curve. I mean,
yes.
That's really the answer to the question.
Yeah, and the other part of that, too, that we were sort of ahead on was the sponsor, the title sponsor part of it. You recall that when when Outback Steakhouse became our title sponsor, it was one of the first bowl games or major events like that where the sponsor's name was the name of the game. as opposed to the FedEx Orange Bowl, for instance, or
right.
the All-State Sugar Bowl, which even today carries that moniker, you know, because, you know, so they have such a long tradition invested in that brand of the Sugar Bowl that they never wanted to give that up. Atlanta, they actually did do that eventually because, you know, the Chick-fil-A originally came on to sponsor that game. It was still the Peach Bowl, and so it was the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. Which didn't really make a lot of logical sense there in regards to when you hear it, but also the fact that most of the time people would just refer to it as the Peach Bowl and not the Chick-fil-A Bowl. So they eventually dropped the name Peach out of it because they wanted them to call it the Chick-fil-A Bowl, not the Peach Bowl.
Okay.
And so in our case, you know, we and more and more bowls have gone to that kind of a naming platform like we did, you know, 25 years ago almost 20 years ago with Outback, where we just called it the Outback Bowl. And if you wanted to talk about the bowl, you had to say Outback. And so
that was
funny,
Mike, you just brought that up about the Peach Bowl.
Gentlemen?
You know, the corporation, the Peach Bowl Corporation, that was the name of the corporation, and they just changed it within the last 3 or 4 months. To Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
It changed the corporate
yeah.
name, so they kept that corporate name all those years.
But
yep,
we have somebody
sure
here that
yes.
really helps us out get the word out about the bowl. On the line with us also is our best friend, Roy Cummins from the Tampa Bay Trib. And Roy's always been a big supporter of the bowl and everything else in that goes with sports here in the city of Tampa.
Roy, good evening.
Doing?
Hey, guys. How's everybody?
Good.
Roy, how are you?
Well, how could we be bad at a place like this?
Are you there? You guys, continue your conversation. Go get into good stuff.
Yeah. Now, we're always on the right spot because we have Leo on with us.
Leo on now? Uh-oh.
he must have gotten his hamburger. He just dropped off.
Right. Big win by our Buccaneers. So I predicted a 48-21, and I'm going to go online. You have a nice trip to Detroit, and the Bucs will come home with a victory for us.
Well, it's a tough battle for them. Detroit's playing pretty well. They've done a good job of taking advantage of other people's mistakes, and so the Bucs got to go up there, and they got to play a smart football game. If they can do that, you know, I think they've been playing well enough the last 3 weeks to give anybody a good test. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, the next step in what they hope is a kind of a rebound in the second half of the season. So we'll see what happens.
Roy, the golf game's still in good shape. I played the Abbey course. The greens are in good shape. And I was under par for those 36 holes. And as I tell Mike that, he's still on the line. Mike, my game's best has played for a long while, guys, so I'm ready for Mike's game and after the ball game, ready for Roy when your game after the season's over. So I'm both games ready for both of you guys.
Hey, Tommy, how many mulligans did you have?
Nothing. Hey, Roy,
you're under par after 36 holes. You trying out for the senior tour or something?
I should. Remember, Roy, tell Mike I was your teacher all summer. Tell him how well you were hitting the ball.
I'll tell you what. One thing Tommy Gilbert can do is teach you how to play golf. He can play that game now. He doesn't need many mulligans, ever. Guy can flat-out play, and if you've got a flaw in your game, he'll find it, and he'll fix it, and get you back out there and then playing at a level that at least makes it fun for you and allows you to somewhat be competitive with the golf course. So he's, I'll tell you what, the man has missed his calling. He should be on the PGA Tour. Tiger Woods wouldn't have had so many problems for all those years if he had time.
I know, maybe next time Tiger's looking for a coach, you can confirm.
Yes, hopefully you can do that. It'd be great up there in that. So, Mike, thank you for your time today, sir. You have a very happy Thanksgiving holiday, sir. Give everybody a big hug from me. And tell Jerry and Jim it's almost counting down to those days. So out back for a weekend,
yeah.
Which I'm looking forward to it, sir.
Appreciate you guys. Appreciate you being
happy
on. And, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And
absolutely.
Look forward to the next couple weeks of big-time college football.
Oh,
well,
I can't wait for it.
Well, good luck, and we hope it all goes as well as you think it's going to.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. So appreciate the kind words, and good to talk with everybody. And want to say hello to Roy as well.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving to you, Mike. Oh, you have a blessed holiday,
thanks,
guys.
Mike. I appreciate that. Good luck with the, with the game.
Thanks.
Take care, Mike. Roy, I just wanted to follow up real quick. You were obviously at that game, covered the game on Sunday. And I mentioned at the top of the program tonight that for the first time that I've seen, a reporter or a columnist has come out and said that it appears that Mike Smith has lost the Falcons. And he gives a lot. It's Jeff Schultz, who I know you know and have a lot of respect for. And I thought it was very interesting because he really broke it down. And in simple terms, I mean, you know, and we've seen coaches, and he used Andy Reid as an example. He used Mike Shanahan leaving, getting fired at Denver, and a number of other coaches that had a lot of success. And the message got stale, and they moved on.
I you know what? I don't think he's lost that football team. I think that football team's just had a hard time dealing with all the injuries. I still think that is as good a coach as there is in the league. Look, you know, I'm not a believer in any coach at any level, well, certainly not the pro level in particular, who's been successful over a long period of time, suddenly getting stupid. And Mike Smith has the second-best record in the NFL over the last 5 years after Bill Belichick. Therefore, I don't think he's suddenly gotten stupid. I don't think he's lost the football team. I can't imagine the people like Tony Gonzalez, Matt Ryan, the people that have been there, Sean Weatherspoon, the guys, you know, the key people that have been there for all these years, suddenly think that Mike Smith no longer has the ability to lead them to a winning season or through the playoffs and maybe into a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl victory. I find that hard to believe. I don't think this coach has done anything to suggest that he's lost the team. Why would he have lost the team? Well, what's he done to lose the team? Well, he's lost the team. He's lost his best players. He lost his best receiver. He lost his second-best receiver. Mm-hmm. He lost his running back. He lost his second-best running back. Jason Snelling went out and did something stupid. That doesn't help your football team. He lost his best linebacker. You know, they had some. They lost some players through free agency, and they're finding out that it's not very easy to replace those guys. I mean, they knew what they were up against this coming season, and that they had a big chance of doing something. It's why they begged Tony Gonzalez to come back. And so, look, the bottom line is, there's no chance Mike Smith gets fired.
I agree with you on that.
For Jeff to come out and say that he's lost, I mean, I'd like to know. I mean, did he cite players and who said, because you know we've had the same, Roger, as you well know, and guys who are listening, I know you know this. We've had that same argument here in Tampa where Greg Schiano, quote unquote, lost the locker room. And it just came out, I was the one who was one of the two people who was talking to Davin Joseph after the game on Sunday,
right,
who said that, you know, what this team realized through this whole thing is just how good of a coach Greg Schiano is and how much more respect they have for him after watching him struggle through this problem, stick with what his, you know, he believes in and continue to preach the same message to these players, at which point they've realized over the last 3 weeks that, hey, you know what? He was right. And today, Gerald McCoy came out and somebody asked him about that. And he said, what you guys are suggesting is that he lost the locker room at some point. I've been trying to tell you all year long, he never lost the locker room.
Ooh.
So I do know, you're right, Roger. I know Jeff. I respect Jeff. I think he's very good at what he does. But I'll say this about columnists. Sometimes I think they feel like they have to, you know, kind of throw their own Hail Mary pass, you know, and it seems to be a lot of all or nothing involved in what columnists write these days, and, you know, we saw it here in Tampa, where people have been calling for Greg Schiano's head since week two, I should probably say week one, but, you know, they've been calling for his head all year long. Now, some of those people are coming off that and saying, oh, maybe I was wrong, you know, looks like maybe he's got a chance to turn his team around. Well, yeah, no kidding.
Roy, where they lose their next game, they'll be right back on the bandwagon again.
Well, yes, they will.
It's all a matter of week to week. But the one thing I'd like to have you comment on, and it's not so much Greg Schiano. I think the job he's doing, the front office. How do you come up with three running backs? Now they got the running back this week was one of three people picked as the NFL player of the week. I mean, they've gotten three now. Hey, what did he gain, 146 yards last week?
Guys, I'm going to go on record as saying this. Some people will laugh, the people that are listening in. Some will laugh. Some will think I'm absolutely out of my mind, but I'm not out of my mind because Mark Dominic is one of the best talent evaluators in the NFL. He's been with this team for 15 years.
Yep.
He's worked behind people like Jerry Angelo, Tim Russell, and Rich McKay. He's worked for Tony Dungy, John Gruden, Bruce Allen. This man knows football as well as anybody else in an executive position in the league. He has the ability, and he's proven it over and over and over again, to go out and find diamonds in the rough. Sorry for the cliche, guys, but Donald Penn, who is going to start his 103rd game in a row for the Buccaneers, tying with David Logan for the fourth most in franchise history, was a guy he picked up off a practice squad. Bobby Rainey is a guy he picked up off waivers when the Cleveland Browns and before that the Baltimore Ravens decided this kid can't play. This kind of stuff happens all the time with this Buccaneers football team, and it probably happens around the league. It's how you build a football team in the salary cap era, because as you guys know, no matter what the cap is, about 30 or 40% of that is going to go to about five or six players, and the rest of the guys, what that means is, you got to have a bunch of guys at the bottom of the roster who are making the minimum, and those guys have to be productive for you. And the draft is a crapshoot; it's very hard to predict. The best way to build a football team is to watch other players and watch the tape of other teams' practices and workouts and things like that. When you have that opportunity from training camp, things like that, and get an idea who is the best player on a practice squad. Find out who the players are who can play in this league and keep an eye on the waiver wire. When somebody goes down, you pick them up. And that's what they did. They didn't even need a running back when they picked up Bobby Rainey. Don't forget, when they picked up Bobby Rainey, that was before Doug Martin went down.
Yep.
They were just kind of saying, hey, you know what? This kid can play football. I'm going to get him just in case. And guess what? Just in case happened. And they've got the kid. And that's how you build a championship caliber team. It obviously isn't going to be a championship caliber team this year, but that's how you win football games when you're down to your third and fourth string players.
Well, I think, Roy, when you look at it in Tampa, you have to give the same tip of the hat to the Rays. They do exactly the same thing. They scout extremely well, and when they have to make a move, they make a move that's going to help the ball club. And to me, what you just said, Dominic, is exactly right. I mean, how you come up with a guy who's on a practice squad and hadn't played, and all of a sudden, he's your number one back.
Absolutely. Well, you know, again, when preparation meets opportunity is the cliche that the people in the football world like to use, but there's something to it. It's got to be part on the kid, too. You know, the kid's got to be ready. As Greg Schiano was saying the other day, you know, if Bobby Rainey had been sitting on the couch eating bonbons for the last month, he wouldn't have done it. But he had an opportunity coming, and he prepared himself for it, and when the opportunity came, he was ready, and he took advantage of it. And, you know, it's unfortunate, Roger, in your town, it's unfortunate that some of the guys who've had to step in, you know, haven't done as good a job there as some, you know, a couple have here in Tampa, which is nice to see here. But, you know, I'd like to ask you, Roger, about what you asked me about. I mean, do you believe what Jeff said? I don't think that's the case.
No. I don't think so either. And, I mean, talking to the players, I know I have a lot of respect and I think I have a pretty good relationship with Thomas Dekeu. And, you know, he was quoted as saying, I talked to him one-on-one the other day, but he was quoted as saying in Jeff's column that he's frustrated. Well, they're all frustrated, you know. And it also goes, and I think Thomas Dimitrov is like a Mark Dominic, one of the best talent evaluators in the league, and, you know, he didn't become dumb all of a sudden. But I agree with you 100%, where there were mistakes made on the free agent market. both offense and defensive line. And I think the loss of Todd McClure when he retired at center has really put that offensive line in flux. It just has not been coherent at all. And I was glad to see Joe Hawley. They put him in. I think Joe will do a good job. But they moved him from center to guard, and I guess he's going to be the starting center now. And I think that that might stabilize them. And I think tomorrow night is the game. I mean, you know, as Mike Smith said Monday, they hate us, we hate them. So it's on national TV, and what better way than to make a statement than to beat those Saints.
Well, Roy, yeah, I think one of the things you said at the very beginning, before the season even started, that you touched on, and I was very happy to see that Greg Schiano really basically said what you talked about the first couple of weeks, and even in the training camp, when he talked about that this is the differential between the teams that win and the teams that lose is a fingerprint. I mean, it's so infinitesimal that it's very, very hard to compute.
And you're right. And you know what? That's why and the Bucks, not Bucks, I'm sorry, the Falcons know that. Rich McKay knows that. Thomas Dimitroff knows that. Certainly Arthur Blank knows that. I know Arthur's frustrated. You know, you talk about frustrated. Yeah, Thomas DeGuz is frustrated, and he should be. But Arthur Blank's probably more frustrated than anybody. The last thing you want when you think you're really, you know, on a steady path, a steady ascension, you know, up the standings, and then you've become one of the elite teams in the league, which is the Falcons were, you know, the last thing you need is one of those seasons where everything just goes wrong for you, where you can't get the breaks in the game, you lose players, and that's what they've had, you know. But the worst thing to do in that situation, and I don't know if Jeff suggested this in his column, but when you say that the coach has lost the team, you really aren't suggesting anything. But if he's suggesting a coaching change, that's the worst thing you can do. I mean, as I said before, guys, last week I think we talked about it. In my opinion, the teams that are the best and most consistent at winning are the teams that are the most consistent within with keeping the people around that run the program, you know, and that starts with the general manager. It starts with the head coach. And I think so much damage is done and so many steps backward are taken when you make those changes, all based on the fact that, oh, you know what, we didn't win the number of games we thought we were going to win this year. And when you don't evaluate the losses properly and realize that, you know what, it wasn't the coach's fault. It was some other player's mistake, or, you know, some guy slipped on this, you know, or just, you know, whatever, you know. It's like you said, because the difference between winning and losing is so slim in this league. It's so hard to, in my opinion, blame it on the coach, because if you're not prepared, I mean, look, there are programs out there that clearly are completely fouled up. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the Falcons are not one of them.
Exactly.
I think what I should have really said is, I think what he was stating is their message can get stale, okay, with the players. And I think the four of us that follow the Eagles will agree that the message really got stale in Andy's last year.
Yes, exactly. That's a great point, Roger. Roy, you wrote a great article on Sunday about Coach Schiano, and I wish I should have saved to send it up to Roger up there, and because that was one of the best articles you ever wrote about the Bucs, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading it. As a Buccaneer fan, you're told the fans stick with Schiano. He's having a tough time with the Bucs. That's a great article you wrote.
Well, you know what I was writing there, Tommy, was really just it's just saying that, look, there's more to this season than the first eight games, and
right,
you know, and I think people lost track of that. Again, I go back to what I said earlier in the year earlier in the show when I said that at the beginning of the year, as soon as they lost the first game, people were, you know, doubting Greg Schiano and saying, you know, it, for whatever reason he's an easy target to pick on, and people are taking their shots at him. And for whatever reason, some people want him out, you know. And a lot of people misinterpreted what was happening here in Tampa and didn't look at, you know, the situation realistically to know that, you know, some of the key players, you know, weren't playing good football. some of them weren't capable of playing at the level they're capable of playing. I like Davin Joseph, like Darrell Rivas, which we've talked about. Josh Schriemer wasn't playing good football. And for whatever reason, Dexter Jackson just showed up, in my opinion, despite what the stats say, just showed up, in my opinion, last week. That was his best game of the year because I saw a true effort there from him. So, you know, and again, it's just that to judge everything based on, you know, one, you know, we see it. We saw it earlier in the NHL season where a couple of coaches got fired within a month.
Yep.
And I was like, look, if that's the move, then why did you even start the season with the guy? I'm
right.
not going to give him a chance
point.
To begin
right.
with. And I
point.
See that a lot. And, you know, to me, one thing I'll give the Glazers credit for, I'll give the Glazers credit for a lot of things, but one of the things that I will give them credit for is their patience. They seldom, if ever, they've never fired a coach in season. They've never fired a coach after less than 3 years. And one of the reasons they do that is they want a full evaluation of the coach before they make a move. They don't want to just, you know, on a whim, fire him in the middle of the season.
Right.
Because, you know, what if Greg Schiano proves to be the, you know, what if he wins the last eight? What if he wins six of the last eight? You know, seven of the last eight? You'll suddenly be saying, hey, I guess we were wrong about him. Yeah, no kidding. But
right.
at the same time, it cost you, if you fired him, it cost you $10 million, but now you got to go find somebody else and start all over again. You don't want to do that.
Right. No.
Right.
No. But
Roy, Doug Fernandez had a big piece of the local paper here in Sarasota today talking about the growth of Mike at quarterback and what he's done in the short period of time. And when you talk about talent evaluators and how long is it going to take to really get a clear picture, what's your thumbprint on that? How do you think he has grown in the 6 weeks?
I think he's grown tremendously, but I think he came in with a better foundation than most rookie quarterbacks have. He's a smart kid. Cerebrally, mentally, I think he's well ahead of the curve from most rookie quarterbacks, and I think it's a result of having worked for 4 years under Dana Bible and Tom O'Brien at NC State. He went to that school and, you know, for a reason, because they run a pro system, and he wanted to be taught in a pro scheme and how to be a pro quarterback, and they did that. And he's got a tremendous work ethic, and not just in terms of physical work ethic. His work ethic, maybe his best skill, is his ability to quickly pick up defenses and understand the offense. And that's a lot of the stuff, you know, a lot of the things that people don't realize about quarterback play. So much of it is mental, you know. You got to be able to throw the ball and make all the throws and make quick decisions and run for your life and, you know, at times. But really, about 90% of that game is mental. And if you can do the rest of this stuff, great. You know, but you got to be able to figure it out. And he's able to figure it out. And I think, you know, I think the Bucks through their scouting department, through Mark Domenech, Greg Schiano, I think they knew that, and that's why he was the target and why they felt confident when they made the move with Josh Freeman that we're going to be better with this guy, because they have been better with this guy.
Hey, Roy, wasn't Tom O'Brien the coach at Boston College when Matt Ryan was there?
Absolutely. Same with Dana Bible. They were both there together at Boston College, and Dana Bible, he coached Matt Ryan. He coached Russell Wilson, and he's coached Mike Glennon. If Mike Glennon can be anything close to what Matt Ryan and Russell Wilson have been, the Bucs got themselves a hell of a quarterback.
Absolutely.
Okay? I don't call him a franchise quarterback yet, but they got a hell of a quarterback. So Dana Bible's done an excellent job of producing quarterbacks for the National Football League. So is Tom O'Brien. And the Bucs have one of them. You know, you can only hope here in Tampa that he's going to be what those other two guys were.
Well, Roy, the way he played the first couple of games has been great, but I still give him credit to Bucks running back coach, my buddy from Cleveland, Ernest Biner. Look at the job he's done to four different running backs in all those weeks right now. I mean, give Ernest credit, and I think he's done one heck of a job with those running backs, especially Gunning, especially that Bobby Ramey getting over 163 yards, a franchise record for one game last Sunday.
Well, you're right, Tommy. You're not the only one giving him credit. So Davin Joseph did the same thing last week. He came out and said that, hey, a lot of that is Ernest Biner getting these guys ready. You know, and that's a bit of a task, too. And I'm working on this week and trying to find out exactly what it is that he's been doing with these running backs to kind of get them coached up. You know, what are the little nuances that he's emphasizing that have got guys like Bobby Rainey and Mike James ready to go and made them so good? I mean, for all we know, maybe it's Ernest Biner is the reason that Doug Martin had so much success last year. So the Bucs may have a hidden gem right there in their running backs coach. And, oh, gee, by the way, who was he hired by? Yeah, Greg Schiano. Yeah, I forgot that. They wanted to fire Greg Schiano 6 weeks ago.
Hey, Roy, think about that is Ernest Biner had this great year with the Browns under Bernie Kosar, and the offensive line for the Browns back then was fair, not the greatest offensive line with the Bucs having right now. The shorts, first we had that fumble up there, but Mack and Ernest Biner, when I used to be up in Cleveland covering the Browns, were those guys who had the best tandem in the NFL, and Bernie Kosar, you throw Bernie Kosar in the mix, it's like Glenn in the quarterback, and there you go. We have like almost like the Browns of the Bucs, and next year it's going to be a big year for the Bucs right now. That's the way Bernie and Mack first started out up there. You know, also Ernest Biner first started off that way. It was tough up there, but then he got the confidence in the system with Glenn Stone right now, with Bobby Rambis doing, and with all those running backs doing under Ernest Biner. It's going to be a great year for the Bucs this next season, I think.
Well, you know, the thing is, Tommy, and every coach goes through this, the ones who've been established, who've done it before, probably the time frame is much shorter. But every coach, when he comes to a new program, especially if he's a new head coach for the first time, there's a time period there, a feeling out period, where the players kind of go, well, all right, how's this going to work? And the coach always tells them, hey, just trust me, guys, just trust me. And the players buy in. They trust them, but only for a while. And it's got to come to fruition at some point, and that's where I believe the Buccaneers are at right now. They've had a lot of new guys come in. That, you know, that messes with the chemistry right away. It's not like they just had the same team from last year, even though some of the key parts are there from last year. When you bring in Darrell Revis and Deshaun Golson, and you bring, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, a lot of new players, they have a lot of ideas. They came from winning programs. They start to see how things are done here. They realize it's different. It's real hard not to say, well, you know, we did it like this at this place. We did it like this at that place. It's a difficult deal. And, you know, the coach has got to be proven right at some point that his system works, that what he tells you is going to pay off the way, you know, he keeps telling you it's going to pay off. And when it starts to come through like that, well, that's when the people start to believe. Tony Dungy had it at one point. When he started, he kept saying to these guys, believe, just trust me, just trust me, it will work, trust me. And when 1997, when he started winning, everybody figured it out, and it worked. And people,
Roy, how's the Golson going to affect this game? Because it's his third violation, and they put him down for a game, and with the momentum just starting to build a little bit, you don't really want to lose one of your players.
No, you don't. They've been without him for two games earlier this year.
Right.
And it wasn't like, you know, the secondary fell apart. You know, he's a darn good player, and they're going to miss him, especially against Calvin Johnson, because you're going to really want to put a two-man team on him, not a zone type thing, but put two guys playing man against him, and Bolton would have been one of them. So they're going to miss him. It's a big test for Keith Dandy, a second-year player from a small school. So we'll see, but you know, they've got to hope that Darrell Revis can really lock down that big guy. It's going to be tough, but we'll wait. We'll see on Sunday. But you're right; it's the timing's horrible, and it's something that the Bucs have to really address with Deshaun Golson. They got to sit him down and say, "Look, not only are you costing yourself money, but you're costing the team here, man, and that can't happen."
And this is the third time. And, you know, it's not like he's a first-time starter here. I mean, they gave a break a couple of times, but this time they came down on him.
Well, and
you know what, Jack?
Leo's on her.
Yeah, you know, the NFL better realize that if the receiver ducks or moves, you can't sit there and Roy, watch this thing Sunday. And as soon as Robbie White caught the ball and started to turn, he's ducking. The game is not played in slow motion. You can't go back. And you can see right away, he knew right away that where he aimed was not where he was. And it's so indicative of the NFL. Look what happened today. The hit on Drew Brees drew a fine. I mean, dear God, it's about as football a play as you can get. You know,
right.
He wraps his arm around, and the NFL better realize real quick that they're going to start getting people going down on the knees, and they don't want that to happen, but it's going to happen.
Well, it is going to happen, Leo. You're right, and I think, and I agree. My guess is that very quietly, I don't think a lot of noise will be made about it, as is often the case with some of the changes that are made in the offseason. But the competition committee is going to look at it. They've got to figure out a way to kind of find that middle ground and instruct the officials that, you know, it can't always be the fault of the defensive player when an offensive player gets hit in the head. It can't. If the players, you know, and these are, you know, these are instinctive moves that are being made. You know, players ducking for, you know, going down. It's just part of your natural instinct. So you're right. I think that, you know, they say it's a defenseless receiver, but at the same time, I think the defensive player is a little bit defenseless too, because again, these are instincts, and if you've got your target in the right place, if you're going for a guy's gut, and his instinct is to go even lower, and you hit the head, well, then what are you going to do? And I think the league's looking at it that way and trying to be as subjective as they can on those plays, but you know they do have a big problem with the safety of the game, and they've really, and this may be why it doesn't change right away. They've really got to continue to at least give the impression that they are trying everything they can to keep the game safe.
But, Roy, after they've seen it, after they've seen the replay, and everybody has seen the replay during the course of the game, and they reviewed it in the NFL offices, I mean, how can they then, after they see that it was a bad call, how can they find anybody or do something? I mean, does it make sense?
I think in this case, guys, it was reputation. There's no doubt that no matter the sport, your reputation follows you, and if you're a multiple offender, you're going to pay the price. It's just like in society, you know, if you've been caught robbing a bank three times, the fourth time they're going to throw you in the slammer, and you know you're not going to get off. So it's the same thing, and that's why Deshaun Goldson's got to work at this. It's something he really has to practice. He's got to change his habits. They don't mind you hitting guys hard, but you got to hit him properly, and you know.
Yeah, but he just wrapped him up. I mean, he didn't hurt him, right? He just wrapped him up.
Exactly.
Well, you're right. But it was a helmet to helmet hit, and you know, it's just he leads with his helmet, guys. There's no doubt about it. He leads with, you know, Mason Foster may miss this game this week. He missed practice today with a concussion.
Oh,
and that was friendly fire from Deshaun Goldson. Go back and look at the play when Mason Foster got hit. He took it right on the coconut from Deshaun Goldson, who was coming in the same way he came at Roddy White. He came in on another play, and it was unfortunate that, you know, two Buccaneers were already there, and he comes in to finish it off, and you know he lowers his head and he knocked out Mason Foster. So he's got to change the way he's playing the game.
Yep.
There's no doubt about that. He's got to do it, or he's going to get drummed out of the league.
Yeah, and you know what, guys? Here's the toughest part. Because what you teach as a coach is not lead with the helmet, but you see what you hit. And the first thing you teach is by football. You put your face mask on the football. You do not lead with your shoulder. You lead with your face, but not with the crown of the helmet. You bow your neck, and the first thing you do is find the football, and that head goes right to the football. That's your problem. Because if you start teaching leading with the shoulder, you're going to have guys with dislocated shoulders, broken collarbones.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a double-edged. It's not a Pandora's box here, fellas. And you know what? When they talk about a defenseless receiver, let's go back to the Jets game where Golston had the first hit. What made that receiver a defenseless receiver? The quarterback threw it 4 feet over his head.
Yeah.
That's why he was defenseless. He had to jump up in the air. You know, if you don't want them to be defenseless, don't bring them over the middle.
Right.
And the NFL start looking at this and saying, you know, we're going to end up becoming a two-hand touch league, especially with the quarterback.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well,
but I will say this. We talked at the top of the show before you and Roy got on, and Roy's been around the team and the coaches now since Monday night. Give me your view on what you've talked about in the locker room or wherever about that call on Monday night. You two guys, because we talked about it at the top of the show.
Right.
I'd like to hear what you fellas have to say.
It was pass interference. There's no debate. It was pass interference. The reason the ball was uncatchable was because Luke Kuechly was pushing the receiver out of the way. That was pass interference. Let me tell you something. I've seen 33 dozen pass interference calls that are further away from the ball and are uncatchable by guys than that. That guy was the targeted receiver. Gronkowski was the targeted receiver, and he
right.
wrapped up. I haven't seen guys wrap up that well on tackles in the middle of the field.
But, Roy, have you ever heard of the fact that it was intercepted? I mean, they had the officials on after the game, a former official, who is their designated official reporter, and every one of them substantiated the fact the ball was intercepted. I never heard of that rule. I never heard because the ball was intercepted, that negates the pass interference.
Either of us.
Go ahead, Roy, I'm going to disagree with you on this. It wasn't pass interference. It was holding. Because he grabbed them on the 5-yard line and danced them to the back of the end zone. Hey, believe me, what I can't understand is the guy that threw the flag was 3 feet away from the play. The guy that came in and overturned it was the side judge that was 30 yards away.
Yeah, but Leo, he changed it because of the fact that the ball was intercepted. I never heard of a ball being intercepted and a pass, an interference call that the ball being intercepted took precedent over the fact that there was pass interference. I never,
oh, you're right.
In
I
my years,
that
and that's 50 years watching this game, I never saw that or heard it.
The only time that happens is if the interference happens after the interception. Example, if they're throwing a post route and
right.
the quarterback throws the ball and the
that's
linebacker...
That's altogether different. Leo, that's altogether
totally
different.
Totally
that's
different.
Not what happened.
No, Don, you and I know, and Roy knows, we know what happened. The guys in the stripes blew the freaking call. Let's be honest.
You're absolutely right. They blew the call because, you know what, how many times have you seen touchdowns, interceptions, runs for 2 yards, runs for 82 yards, all called back, result of the play wiped out because of a penalty. That
yep.
was a penalty. And you're right, Leo. It was holding because it started long before the pass got there. They completely fouled it up. And I'm just kind of surprised that the league didn't come out and say, hey, you know what? Our officiating crew messed that up. I'm interested in why they messed it up. I'm interested in why they decided to change it because, you know, what, they don't want the Patriots to win because they're in Carolina? What? I don't know. All I know is they got it wrong.
Yeah, but they said, and they clearly said, not just one official, not just the fellow that was doing the broadcast that they brought in on the postgame show,
Jerry,
but every one of the officials that talked about it said, that's the rule. If the ball's intercepted, it negates the interference or holding
that's
call
a,
because the ball
Malar-
was intercepted. I never heard of that.
I heard that on NFL radio also.
Absolutely.
The best part was Gruden got, as soon as he said that, Gruden goes, he's got him in a bear hug, and Gruden grabs the guy on TV.
I got to be honest. I can't remember the last time a pass interference call on the intended receiver was wiped out because the ball was intercepted by somebody. I can't remember that. In fact, when's the last time any of you guys, any of us, have heard that argument that, oh, there's no flag because the ball was uncatchable? You know, we see a lot of balls that are uncatchable and a lot of pass interference penalties,
right.
and they don't overturn it because, oh, the guy was throwing the ball out of bounds. That's a bunch of garbage. They got it
well,
wrong.
Roy, I agree with your earlier statement. They blew the call, in my view. They blew the call in all the post-game interviews. Everybody says that they blew the call. Why doesn't the league at least admit, hey,
right.
wait a minute. We made a mistake here. They did admit it last year, remember, the game in the end zone when they had the temporary officials there. At least they said they made a mistake. This
yeah.
time, I mean, everybody's watching. It's Monday Night Football, and they don't say anything except, absolutely, that call was absolutely right.
My guess is that somewhere, and guys, I'm going to have to run on this. This will be my last comment on it. My guess is that somewhere in all the small print in the language of the contract that the NFL got with its officials after that situation last year between the Packers and the Seahawks, somewhere in that small print, there's probably some disclaimer saying the NFL will not criticize similar mistakes made by the regular officials after they go back to work. So my guess is there's some kind of a little conspiracy going on there, because you're right. They would do the right thing if they would just step up and just say, hey, you know what, we screwed that one up, boys.
Hey,
exactly.
Roy, have a good trip to Detroit, Roy.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Roy, take care. Happy Thanksgiving, Roy.
Thank you.
All right. Thank
you. You're exactly right, Leo. I mean, you're looking at the thing clearly on television. All the replays, I mean, and they show it over and over and over again, and then the league doesn't say, hey, wait a minute, we made a mistake. I mean, how about
this? Okay, here on a more positive note, I have a flash here. The Delaware state trooper that was wounded today has been released from the hospital.
Hey, that's good news.
Now, let me also give you some other good news from the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay, great story today. I think it was Paul Donovich. It was Les Bone, one of them. But it's all about Chip Kelly. You know that the Philadelphia Eagles players have sleep monitors on them that they get 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night.
The other thing is they always criticize
Greg Schiano, any coach that comes out of college. You know, they were after Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly had a great point today. He said, everybody thinks that when the last game of the year until the bowl game, you sit around waiting to practice for the bowl game. Incorrect. The coaches are on the road. They're flying all over the country. He says, right now it's much more stable getting prepared for a game in the NFL than it is in the month of December as a college coach. Good point.
Wow.
Hey, guys, can I make you jealous?
Okay.
Two weeks ago, I can cross this off the bucket list. I'm at Lambeau Field watching Eagles beat the Packers.
Before we go any further, my lovely
great city of Philadelphia, and that Bernard Fernandez was inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame, New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, on Saturday night.
Ooh. Oh, that's great.
That's fantastic.
Well, the other thing is, I spoke to you guys yesterday about having him back on, Jim Murray. You know, going to be the Ed Snyder Humanitarian of the Year by the Philadelphia Sports Writers.
Right.
And
hey, Frank, just a little bit on the side. Was that fight last night that was on TV, that championship light heavyweight fight, was that live or was that a tape fight on Showtime?
Yeah, it was taped. What a great
fight that was.
Yes,
when
was
that fight, Frank?
Pardon me?
When was that fight?
Last Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. I caught it last night.
I watched the whole fight last night. I said, I can't believe this. I didn't read anything in the paper about it. I didn't know anything about it. I said, this can't be live on a Tuesday night. What the heck is going on?
Hey, Johnny, I'll tell you what,
I had the same problem. I lost $50 on the fight and $50 on the replay.
You just know they got to lose, right?
Jen, I'd like to walk our next guest, our official golf pro, Doug. Doug, guess who's on with us this week? Your buddy Leo. Here we go. Here we go, Leo. Doug's on with us.
The hair on the back of my cat's neck standing up. He's ready.
Yeah, just don't let that tail get up in the air.
Here we go.
You guys were talking all this different kind of football, and it's been kind of cool to listen to it. But do you think guys are more worried about hitting people than they are tackling?
Great point.
Well, they're not tackling very well. I put it that way, Doug.
That's what I'm saying. It's been awful. It's almost like everybody thinks that every time they play football, they can get on ESPN if they just make that one big hit instead of tackling people.
Gentlemen, I want to give you something for homework over the weekend.
Okay.
I want you to watch a college game and watch a pro game. Mm-hmm. And watch the wide receivers especially and see who has no knee pads on. That's why the NFL doesn't want people going down the knees. For some reason, and I don't know why, these guys go out there without knee pads. And the guy
I've been
say,
saying
well,
that for years.
Fast. Yeah, but here's the funny thing. The referee, and again, guys, in college and in high school, I don't know about the pros, but the first thing they say is all your players equipped properly. It really means you got knee pads. I mean, I'm looking at these guys. The pants don't even get to the knees, and they got a little piece of foam in there. Come on. And they're wondering why they're getting their helmets don't fit. They're not wearing knee pads. You know,
the NFL has the guy that goes around and checks every team. I know who the guy is in Atlanta, former player, and he's down the field, and he has a clipboard, and he makes sure everybody is properly dressed with pads and everything else. So I'm sure you guys know who the guy is in Tampa.
Well, no, he's not checking for pads. He's checking for socks to make sure they're the right height and that everything is uniform.
Right. No emblems on anything.
Correct.
Right. Hey, Leo, let me tell you something. I played Division I college baseball, and you would be shocked at the amount of people that were on my team that did not wear a cup to play baseball.
Really?
Oh. Let me tell you something. I wouldn't walk through the lunch line without a cup on for fear that, like, a stray fork could hit me or something.
I'll tell you what, guys. I played 4 years of college football without one, and believe me, I caught one in the Happy Trails.
Oh.
But you can't – honestly, you can't run with one. It's almost
– It's definitely an acquired skill, but, I mean, it only takes one shot for you to change your mind. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, boy,
but I'll tell you this. The one point you just made is absolutely correct, and John Gruden spent a lot of time on it over the weekend, and especially on the Monday night game, and he talked about, you know, the tackling, how bad it's been, especially on the outside. He's been talking about the wide receivers and how well they block, and he singles out the ones that do it. But he also singles out the ones that can't make a tackle, and we saw Monday night a number of plays that he pointed out where they, you know, they just pulled one arm out and the guy went right by him.
Yeah. You know, what's simply amazing to me, though, is that, you know, the more you listen to the different, whether it's ESPN or NFL radio or all these different things, obviously the concussion is still a hot topic, you know, coinciding with what you guys are talking about with tackling and hitting and stuff like that. But to me, it's like, is this like some sort of a revelation that if you play a collision sport, and you have to wear a helmet to protect your head, that there might be some sort of inherent danger in the sport you're playing?
Right.
You know, like, do you think boxers go in there and say, oh, well, geez, 25 years from now, I hope I can still, you know, eat my Skittles and M&Ms without, you know what I mean, let them fall out of my mouth or something because they can't chew or, you know what I mean, whatever. I mean, what, you know what I mean? Like, we have to do studies on this. Like, if somebody said to you, all right, Leo, I'll give you $5 million, if you play football this 1 year and if you get the snot beat out of you and you get a concussion, you know, or whatever, then that's too bad, buddy, but you got your $5 million.
Gentlemen, it's why we fought wars with young people. They think they're indestructible. You know, let's be honest. I had a fight with an English teacher one time. They said, why are football players not smart? And we were having our meeting in the cafeteria. I said, I'll make you a deal. You go stand on that wall. I'll go stand on this wall. You run as fast as you can at me. I'll run as fast as you can at you. And we'll see who can knock the other person down.
Right.
And
but what school was this, Leo?
Leto. It was in high school. And
Leto High School, okay.
Yeah, and the lady looks at me and goes, that's not real smart. I said, I rest my case. I said, I don't want geniuses.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing,
just
real quick. Pat Kerwin, former GM of the Jets, who's on Sirius NFL Radio every day, really great guy, has a great book out. He's been tracking the time it takes for a review on the college games, every one of them versus the pros. And the pros ought to go to the college system because I want to tell you, it saves a lot of time.
Yeah, but guys, I'll tell you what. I don't know if you saw the Georgia-Auburn game.
Oh, I did.
Oh, yes.
How do you not have a camera on both sides of the end zone when Aaron Murray gets in the end zone at the end? I mean, you couldn't tell. They called it a touchdown, and they had to keep it a touchdown because there was no camera on the other side showing him going down.
Right. And you're exactly right, Leo. But I will say this, that I have finally found after all these years what the problem is, and that is that no cup and then running at each other in high school has proven to me
That explains it, right?
Exactly what the hell's wrong with you.
Hey, he didn't have either head protected, did he?
Help me keep my hair down.
But I saw a guy 48 years old last night go 12 rounds, and I'm telling you, I can't believe it. I can't believe that you can be 48 years old, play for the light heavyweight championship, and go 12 rounds and that kind of activity. I mean, that fight was one of the best fights I've seen in 10 years.
Wow.
Was the guy's name Briscoe?
No, Benny Briscoe, nope. Looked like Benny. It has a bald head, but it wasn't Benny Briscoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gentlemen, are you ready for the picks? Roger, you won them last week.
Yeah, ready to go. Roll them.
Second. All right, ready? Saints at Atlanta. Who wants to lead off here?
I'm going Saints.
Saints,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Saints.
Guys, I'm going to take the Falcons. It's a short week. The Saints had a very emotional win. It's going to be hard to come back. I think the Falcons are going to have it. But I'll tell you what scares me about the Falcons. Roddy White looks like a shadow of himself. And, Roddy,
right.
Are you seeing the same thing up there?
Oh, yeah. Well, and he's been hurt. You know, he was out three or four weeks.
Yeah.
But I think also not having Julio on the other side really affects him, too.
Oh,
you know?
Lord. Yeah, you know, we talk about teams that well, they're 2-8. They're 2-8 because their two best receivers can't play. Oh.
Right.
I'm going to go with Leo Falcons. I think Arthur Blank made the message. It's going to be home game. Roger will be in attendance. Tell my friend Daryl that's my very best, and tell him I have a very happy Thanksgiving.
Daryl was saying, hey, I met your man Tommy. I said, I know. I told him that you were on the show. Oh, that's right.
tell our buddy Reggie Roberts hello, right, Tommy?
I saw Reggie last weekend. Oh, God
always
bless
do.
Him. Frank,
what do we got? Only two guys went for the Falcons, right?
That's right. Frank, did you pick it? Who's Frank pick?
Hey, Don, that's because he ran full speed at a guy and he doesn't wear a cup. What else is he going to pick?
I don't know which area his body was more severely hurt.
I'm not sure.
Oh, God.
Hold on. I want to know
there's nothing else that's going to run into anything else.
I want to know who the pussy picked. Who the pussy picked that game?
Oh, no.
Wasn't you.
Dalton saw his intelligence. He wouldn't even waste a sniffle on either one of those picks. That's a saint, right for sure.
When we get to the pussy pick of the week, let me know.
My sides are killing me. I love this. I love Wednesday nights. And Capone's under a chair, guys. And Capone's like, I'm yelling at him.
We got some good news. Nottingham beat Middletown North. They were the only Mercer County team to advance in the playoffs.
There you go. Don't forget, we talked about it before, that our St. Joe's quarterback's going to get a chance to play.
St. Joe's prep. That's Skyler Morningwig.
Morningwig's
son. And also,
right.
I was... with Lee Shaw yesterday up at Raven County. And, you know, his son Connor is at South Carolina. He's one touchdown pass away from setting the record at South Carolina.
Wow.
And he's also being considered for the Heisman. He's already a candidate for Johnny Unitas and Davey O'Brien. So,
wow.
You know, congrats to Connor Shaw at South Carolina.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. Bucks at Detroit. I'm going to go with the red-hot Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm probably crazy. My dog thinks I'm nuts, but I'm going to go with the Bucks, guys.
I'm going to go Detroit.
If Golston was playing, I'd take the Bucks. But that's a huge hole to fill, and Megatron walk into that hole. Detroit.
For Frank?
Well, Tommy, your dog's not the only one who thinks you're nuts.
Did you just say Tommy's dog is the only one that sniffs his nuts?
All right, Doug, you got the Lions too, I guess.
The safe bet is to pick the opposite of Leo. I take the Lions.
No, I take the Lions.
Yeah, he's got the Lions. All right, Jacksonville at the Texans. This is the game in a WEAK. Both teams are going.
I'm going Texans.
I'm taking
the
Texans, too.
All right. I'm going to go with Texans, too.
Can the Texans find another way to lose? I hope not.
Frank, Doug?
Yeah,
what do we have? Texans and who are the Texans playing?
Texans and Jacksonville.
Good Lord, I got to take the Texans.
You know, Doug, you talked about playing baseball earlier in the show, and Leo was a baseball player, you know, and the only two balls he hit was when he stepped on a rake.
Oh, man.
I got to love this.
Yeah, the problem was one was fair and one was foul. Hey, by the way, Don, end of an era. Rossi's in Trenton, moving to Hamilton, closing down.
I know that because when I was home the last time, the boys said that they just didn't want to run it anymore. Chambersburg was getting too rough, and they didn't want to run it.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. Oh. San Diego at Kansas City, oh boy. Andy Reid for sure.
Yeah, I got to go with the Chiefs too.
Yeah, I'm going to say they bounce back. I'll go with the Chiefs too.
Okay, Roger, Chiefs?
I'm going to take San Diego.
Ooh! Uh-oh. Doug,
I just think that the Chiefs may been knocked down a peg. And it may be take them a week to recover, that's all. And I think San Diego's too.
Okay. Oh, okay. Frank?
I'm going with the Chiefs.
Okay. Doug?
Kansas City.
Okay. Next up is Carolina at Miami. I'm going to go with Carolina. Carolina's playing some great football. Gentlemen?
Yeah, the way they played against the Patriots here tonight, I got to go with Carolina.
I'll tell you what, fellas, it's tough to come back on a Monday night with a game Sunday, but thank you, Miami Dolphins, for having every bit of no wanting to play anymore, so I'll take Carolina.
All right, Doug and Frank?
Yeah, Carolina's the pick.
Yeah, Carolina.
Okay, sweep the Pittsburgh at Cleveland. Being a Browns fan all my life, I say Pittsburgh stinks, go Browns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
Tommy, I'll go with you on that. I think the Steelers are just getting old.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you, Leo. I think not only that, but Roethlisberger had a great week last week, but I don't think he can do it 2 weeks in a row. I'm going to go that way, too. Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Whoa, okay. People Cleveland. Okay, Roger?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Cleveland, too, Tommy.
Okay, Doug?
For two reasons. Number one, I will never pick Pittsburgh. And number two, Joe Hayden might be the best quarterback in football. Whoever he covers equals zero.
Frank, you picking the Browns?
I'm going to Browns.
Okay. Get
Frank, there are only two teams.
Yeah, I know. There's 37 lines wide open. So in between, I got to figure out what I'm doing.
Issue with Frank. Bears
and the Rams. I don't know. It's going to be a good contest. I want to go upset special, guaranteed lock of the week, the St. Louis Rams.
Oh. Tommy, I got to throw that pick out because the Rams are a 1-point favorite.
Ooh.
At home. And I'm taking the embraceable U's as well.
Okay.
I'm going to go with you. I like them as well.
Okay. Roger?
Okay. It's St. Louis and who?
The Bears at St. Louis.
The Bears.
At the Bears, right?
No,
at St. Louis.
At St. Louis, okay. I'm going to take St. Louis because cover is probably out. Oh, I know he's out.
Right. All right, we got Doug and Frank.
I got St. Louis.
Okay. I'll take the worst show on turf. I'll take St. Louis.
Doug?
Yeah, St. Louis.
Okay. The Jets at Baltimore, I know what Frank wants to pick, and I'm going to pick Baltimore, too.
Well,
hey, Baltimore would just be happy to be out of the tornado belt.
Yeah. I'm going to say the Jets bounce back this week. I think they're going to win.
Okay.
Yeah, right, I'm with Don. I think the Jets will come back.
Ooh, okay, Leo.
I got the Ravens.
Okay, Ravens and Doug. I know he's going to pick that, so we'll move on right next.
Let me tell you something. If they can't win at this game at home, then we'll be on the clock for the first pick.
Tennessee and Oakland. I'm going to go with Oakland because it's the black call. They're playing some good football. I'm going to go with the Oakland Raiders. Gentlemen?
I'm Oakland as well.
Okay.
I'm going to take Tennessee. They're going to be really pissed off that they lost to Jacksonville.
Oh, that's right.
Not about Tennessee, too, Leo.
Yeah,
okay.
That was 2 weeks ago, Leo. They're still pissed off from 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
All right, Frank and Doug?
I'll go with San Diego.
Ooh.
San Diego?
What? That's a short.
I just
want to
see you guys are listening.
He's in California, so I guess he's close.
Yeah, he's only within 600 miles. Good call.
Right.
Indianapolis at Arizona. I'm going to go with Arizona this week, and this looked real good up there. So, gentlemen?
Boy, Carson Palmer has all of a sudden decided to be a quarterback. I got to go with him.
Ooh, okay.
I'll go with the Cardinals.
Okay.
Well, I certainly got a root for him, so I got to go with the Cardinals, too.
Ooh,
he's done a pretty damn good job over there. So
far. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, he sure has.
Frank or
Doug? I just want to see if Ellington loses any more hair.
All right, Frank or Doug?
I'll take Arizona.
Ooh, okay.
Arizona.
And okay, it's a star frame. Okay. Next one is the old AFC division rivalry, Dallas and Giants. I hate Dallas. Go Giants.
Go Giants.
Giants.
Yeah.
Woo.
The G-Men.
I've got a shirt that says I cheer for the Eagles and anybody playing the Cowboys. Enough said.
And Doug, star frame?
Yeah, G-Men.
Okay. Denver at Captain Happy. I'm going to go with Denver. I can't stand Captain Happy at all.
Captain Happy's not going to lose two games in a row. I'm going with him.
No, he might not lose two in a row, but Peyton Manning's going to win two in a row. I got
Denver. Okay. All right, gentlemen. Roger, I believe?
Yeah, I'm going to go with New England.
Ooh, Captain Happy, okay.
Because they're at home.
All right.
Right.
We got Frank?
Well, I got a shirt. If you guys were talking about the shirts, I went into one and looked my closet, and I have one that says, I choked Blid the Lovelace. But that's what's going to happen out there, too.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Denver and New England.
Fairy
one other point before we jump off that. You know, you talked about the quarterback. I don't think he's going to be playing the last quarter of that game.
Ooh.
Which one?
The one that's going to be on the sidelines with the ankle is supposed to be hurt.
Oh, Peyton Manning.
I think his ankle is hurt. I really do.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it is, too.
Yes.
And that's why I think he's not going to finish the game.
Yeah.
Because you think he'll be knocked out.
I do think he will be knocked out in this game.
Wow.
Believe me, if that happens,
he's not
going to
be as lucky as he was against Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Oh,
hey,
boy.
Hey, Tommy,
you
forgot a game. You forgot a game.
Which one?
Packers and Vikings.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Okay, Packers at Vikings. Josh, who do you
oh,
I'm
boy,
go
that's tough.
It's at Green Bay, and I'll tell you what, fellas. I saw Green Bay against the Eagles. You don't win with 13 quarterbacks in the NFL. I got to take the Vikings as much as it pains me. But until Aaron Rodgers comes back, that's a – That's a Mac team.
Yeah, Leo, I think I'm going to go along with you. I don't think the Packers are going to lose at home, they are going to lose. But I like the Vikings as well. I'm going to go
here. I'm
going to
go to Vikings too.
Vikings also.
Yep, Vikings.
Yeah. And guys, real quick, how bad is Josh Freeman that he can't even beat out Christian Ponder?
bad. So Coach Yonah
knows
he's
doing about. Seattle look pretty good now, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Like 49ers at Washington, your Monday night football extravaganza. I'm going to go with 49ers and I'm going to think Washington's dead, I think. Gentlemen?
Yeah, 49ers.
Well, they're finally figuring out that it's not Shanahan and son down there. It's Sanford and son. And it's a comedy. And, you know, we all sat there, and when Donovan McNabb tried to expose that fiasco down there and say, look, they don't know what they're doing. Everybody said, oh, Donovan McNabb. Well, guess what? Shanahan and son.
I don't think the 49ers are going to lose two games in a row. That's all I can say. So I got to go 49ers.
Okay, yeah. Frank or Doug?
Yeah, I can't go
ahead,
for Frank. No way.
Okay.
Doug takes the 49ers.
Okay. Well, what's important? Who's the cat picking this week?
I can't reveal that because I didn't put him through the ringer here. I didn't pick the game.
Wow.
I tell you, the game that I want to know is the Thanksgiving game. I think the Ravens play the Steelers. I might have to see if I can advise him. He hasn't really been that interested this year in football. He picked it one or two games early on, but he hasn't been interested.
Is that the night game, I guess, on the NBC night game, right, Doug?
Yeah, that's the extra helping, as they say.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you one thing. He's following a lot of the football fans around the country if he's not interested too much anymore.
True.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, will you be in Seagirt for Super Bowl week?
No, I'll be here.
You'll be there. I was hoping you were going to be up there so that we could spend some time in the Big Apple and North Jersey.
I would love to have done that, but I'm not coming back to the cold weather. I'll be back in May.
Just what I want to do is spend time in New York in February. I'm telling you. I hope there's a blizzard so I can look at Roger Goodell and say, I told you so.
Leo, it's going to be 57 degrees and sunny with no wind.
Donnie,
there is no place like the Big Apple, even
that's
in
right.
the winter with the snowstorm.
Hey, I'll tell you what, it's going to be 12 degrees with the wind chill, 20 degrees, and there's going to be snow, and we're just going to sit there and go, great, we're watching a 9-3 Super Bowl.
That's when real football was played, Leo. You got to remember. When you go to Lambeau, to Giants Stadium in the wind and cold, you go up to Patriots in wind and cold.
Right.
That's football.
That's right.
Football is Steve Van Buren shoveling out the yard markers so they can figure out where the heck the daggone ball goes.
That's right. 7-0.
Remember that last Eagles Ravens game at Memorial Stadium? When even with those plastic shutters down, we froze our tushes off.
Guys, I really think, I've been on record for this since the commissioner decided to go to New York. It is going to be the biggest mistake since Pete Rozelle decided to play the Sunday after the Kennedy assassination. It may even be bigger.
I think, Leo,
having seen the one and talking to people that were at the one in Detroit, the first one, and having been at the second one, I've been to Minneapolis when they did it there. I want to tell you, they'll have this thing so well organized. There's so much to do. It's going to be a great time.
Forget so much to do. You got a game in cold weather without a dome.
That's what it's all about, Leo.
No,
don't you understand?
It's
about everything.
It's all about controlling what you can control.
There won't be any recess if we keep
now.
Leo, let me say this. I agree with you. Hold on a minute, Leo.
There.
I agree with you 100%. If they come up with the kind of weather you're talking about, if they come up with a game that's 10, 12 degrees, and that's what happens, and it snows or whatever, then I agree with you 100%. It's very, very tough to predict that.
Remember, there's only
the greatest place in the world to go is New York.
You got it.
I have no problem with that, but do it in August. Don't do it in February. or put a roof on the damn thing. But, guys, let's be honest.
Listen, Tommy and Don, we were all there in Tampa for Super Bowl week, okay? You tell me that all the activity is what really is around the Super Bowl. The game is anticlimactic.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not for
Let's
me.
See.
How about this?
Okay.
How about
I,
this,
Lal?
How was the Super Bowl? How was the Super Bowl in Jacksonville?
It's a great game to watch. Guys,
it's the one in Miami where all my clothes got drenched and the tarp caved on top of me.
And Roger, you know what? It was the only game in Super Bowl history where the weather was a factor.
Yes.
And believe
what
me,
about Texas? What are you talking about? The new multi-billion-dollar stadium.
Roger, remember when they had the ice storm in Atlanta? I mean, could you imagine playing that game outdoors?
I was at that game.
How could you play with a game that
hurt? Dick Vitale got hurt. He was in an automobile accident because they slid on the ice. I was in Dallas. You know, Tommy and Don will tell you, and Frank, I was scared of death when I went to, what is it, American Airlines Arena to see the hockey. I never saw ice that thick in my life.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, those were stalactites or stalagmites, whichever you call them, hanging off the stadium. But guys,
gentlemen, I hate to break up his great – I break up his great conversation. Frank says, tick, tick, tick on the clock.
Round two will be a week
from Wednesday. We're going to take next Wednesday. Frank wants to take next Wednesday off for the holidays, you know, so we have a talk to you a
week. I know you're going to the Flyers.
I think he's going to try to make it up there in that. So we'll take a Wednesday off. Do you want to go
great.
To the hockey game? And from our family, your family, have a very joyous and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. God bless everybody. And
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Absolutely. A lot of over the world.
I always like to be on this line because I learned a lot from Leo.
Well, you know what? And you said that just the way I wrote it for you.
Happy
Remember
Thanksgiving, boys.
Yep. Have
Remember
a great Thanksgiving,
cup.
Guys. We'll talk to you a week from Wednesday.
Guys.
Well, Frank, just real quick, I'd like to thank Mike Schultze from the Outback Bowl, Leo Haggerty from Nike Sports Production or Sports Legends, Don Henderson from Philadelphia, Roger Hainer from Atlanta, and Roy Cummings for the Tampa Tribune, gracious enough to come on. We're taking next Wednesday off. We'll probably replay the show for the entertainment for the Wednesday before Thanksgiving holiday. I have to say this here. I'd like to thank always our sponsor, Bradford White Water Heaters, November, Pennsylvania. Purchase your water, you log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country, give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454, the Abbey Corsi Leos University, 354-5426. And if you're in the Tampa Bay area, hockey games could be next Friday at 4 o'clock versus the Pittsburgh Penguins, 813-301-6600. Skate to TampaBayLightning.com. Frank, from my family to your family, have a very joyous and beautiful God bless Thanksgiving, and God bless everybody out there. Please be safe on the roads out there for this holiday weekend. Do not drink and drive. If you want to drink, stay the hell home. Frank, take it away, sir.
All right, Tommy, we want to thank all our listeners worldwide, and especially Mr. Trevor J., Ty Anthony, Mr. Brady Quinn, and Mr. Bubbly and Squibbly, and always Bubbly, Mr. Cade and Jay Carroll. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every evening in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, you just say thank you. It means the world to everybody. These programs are also dedicated in memory of officers that have lost their lives. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Patrol Division, Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PD, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, and Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. May the sun shine softly on your face. May you be in heaven before the devil knows you're there. May the Lord, good Lord, keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night and thanks. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Shemalek Mahila. Shemalek Mahila. Yilama Shema Hezahilma Sona Shene Vorat Fed Hakuig again my
Good night, Bob.